the Michigan HockeyCast 4.11, where all we can think about is Nick Blankenberg's new dog friend. For Heisman?
Came close.
Did you watch any of that at all?
I saw the, just in the background. I have not watched the Desmond Howard clip because I don't really care.
Oh, yeah. I saw it on Twitter and I was like, this is, or my take on that is, if Ohio State needs to be motivated to beat Michigan, then they have some issues.
I think what's really funny about it, of course, is the fact that the narrative up until 2.5 weeks ago was that Ohio State was always motivated and that Michigan didn't care. Right?
Like, that's wow, how the tables have turned.
Coming out of the last game, that's what the narrative was. Well, and then now it's, oh, like, if you say anything bad about Ohio State, it's going to make us mad.
Have you not been mad for the last 2 decades? It feels like they've been mad. Or maybe they were just like, well, you thought they were too confident anyway.
Yeah, that was part of it.
I hope they stay too confident. But apparently now they will not be because Desmond Howard ruined the whole thing.
Because Desmond Howard said that their offensive line, which was bad, was bad.
Which is actually a compliment to Stroud, given what he did, that he's there with a bad offensive line. I mean, right? I mean, that was like the thing about Michigan quarterbacks of the past, where you kind of bag on them to an extent, but then you'd realize, oh, they had a paper bag and a soup can in front of them.
Well, today, 11 Warriors, the post resurfaced from the summer of 2019 that they got really mad about, where it was like when Harbaugh was asked at Big Ten Media Days about Urban Meyer, and he was like, well, Urban's win and loss record was really good, but controversy has followed him his entire life. And then the post was just like showing the quote, and like it was just like, I don't remember exactly how they phrased it, but they were like an unnecessary shot taken at Urban Meyer. And I'm just like,
when did you guys become Michigan State? I mean, that's kind of what it feels like. I remember when Michigan beat Ohio State in 2011 and everybody went nuts. And I think like they took a knee and then someone from Michigan had the ball and he threw it high up in the air, and as it hit the ground, like, half the Michigan team acted like a bomb went off, and they all, like, fell down. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And Ohio State was, like, furious or whatever. And it's like, what? How do you guys pick what you get mad about? It's just like,
quite curious.
My feelings were hurt, so yeah. I'm going to be angry for the next year. I mean, my feelings are hurt when Michigan loses Ohio State every year, and I have to figure out how to make it to next year. Come on. Anyway.
I will say the Urban Meyer stuff is very funny, but
yeah,
especially after this weekend in particular.
I've tried really hard to not follow it. It's kind of for the same reason. It's just like, I mean, he's on a bad team that has, what, a handful of players that should be starters, and he won 2 games, which is like, wow, I'm not sure that I expected the Jaguars to win a ton more games than that.
Well, they also get to play the Texans and some of those other really bad
they
AFC
lost to
teams.
Them.
Yeah.
They beat the Dolphins, I think, is the big one.
Yeah, but, I mean, I don't know, just comparing them to, say, the Lions, who are, like, a bad team, but, like,
yeah, I mean,
there's harmony in the locker room and the coaches are respected.
And the Lions are, like, some Lions dumb away from, like, 4 wins, so...
Whereas, like, I mean, the Urban Meyer thing is just, it's playing out exactly how everyone thought. And just, like, this is a man who cannot stomach losing, and he's now taking over a team with no talent, and it's gone about as well as we expected.
How do you just walk into that situation and think, we're going to be on the verge of the playoffs? Like, this isn't, like, a loaded dice situation where, you know, you walk into Florida and in a year or two you can win a national championship, or Ohio State. Like, this is an organization that has not had they've had that one lucky year like 3 years ago, and then their last really good run of games was
2005.
David Garrard era. I don't know. It just seems very, like, he's probably met my expectations for the Jaguars this year, and he still has, like, 4 games to go, so.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of win-loss, yes, but, you know, Trevor Lawrence has way underperformed expectations.
That's the other thing, yeah.
The coaching staff hates each other, and well, that's embarrassing the coaches in the locker. I mean, right. It's just a lot of problems.
Well, my next thing that I was going to ask you in our intro was if the Lions won, but we kind of covered that and talked about the Jaguars.
Well, they hung around for a while, but then the thing that has defined the season just keeps happening.
Did you order a Craig Reynolds jersey?
No, but, I mean, Jerry Jacobs, who, by the way, was their number one corner as a UDFA because their other corners have all been injured and out for the season.
Yeah.
And he's, like, been one of the few bright lights in the season, and then he tears his ACL.
Yeah,
well, in a game where a bunch of players were out because they had, like, the flu or whatever. Like, they barely had a roster by, like, the fourth quarter.
Sounds like Michigan hockey, which we'll get to in a second.
Not a bad transition.
Yeah, we can just jump right to it. Because the other things I was going to mention to you are not really that interesting. So, this is a good transition that was made choppy by the fact that I guessed on it. Anyway. So, Michigan goes to Columbus and doesn't have two of their first-round picks and two of their better players in Kent Johnson and Owen Power, but they still should have other people. Thomas Bortolo does not play, which today or yesterday or something was revealed that he tested. I don't know if he had COVID or tested positive for COVID or was just in the same room with someone or something. And so he could not play either. I guess that kills his chances of going to the USA camp.
Yes, it's over.
So Michigan will, in theory, have him in a couple weeks when they play again, which...
Yeah, I mean, they'll have...
You're looking for silver lining.
They'll have Bortolo, they'll have Brisson, so at least you have, like...
One line.
You know, a real top line. Yeah. And you'll have Blankenberg, so at least you'll have, like, a top defenseman. Yeah. And if Triscott gets cut, which hopefully he will...
If he's healthy, we don't even know. Spoiler alert.
Then, like, maybe you have a top pair, and you'll have your goalies. So, like, you'll have a fighting shot, it's just not the same depth. When they play,
I like it. We're like, we only have like three first round picks
in
so
the GLI,
yeah, whatever that means anymore. Just the New Year's tournament. Anyway, game one, I think, could not have started any better. Is like we started our preview with talking about how Ohio State has the 59th best,
yeah,
power or penalty kill in the country, and there are only 59 teams, and so Michigan gets a power play pretty early on, and then no one decides to play any defense near the net as Blankenberg gets a tap-in on the back door that I think it was it Morgan, I believe, or Pasta that passed it to him, but basically through the crease. And, like, you shouldn't be able to pass a puck through the crease, right? Like, either the goalie or a defenseman has to have a stick, but the pass, it comes from, like, one side of the crease to the other, and Blanks is right on the post for a tap-in.
Yeah, they didn't tie him up at all.
And they didn't tie up the passer or anything.
No, it was pretty bad.
Morgan was the guy that got hit with an elbow, and there was some debate as to if that was a legitimate call or not.
I mean, it looked like elbowing to me.
Yeah. There were other people. Maybe it was our buddy, was it Paul Caponegri or whatever was the,
yeah, the
analyst
yeah.
guy who was like, oh, I don't know. But so it's 1-0. Couldn't really start any better for Michigan. And then Eric Portillo goes a wandering, as we call it, and has kind of like a gaff behind the net. And somehow the puck, I think, comes like shooting up while he's still behind the net, is like now shooting up through the crease in the slot. And we're all like falling out of our chairs. Like, what are you doing? But this isn't like, is it, I don't think that is something that we, like, we've talked about how when you have a goal that's going to go out and play the puck, it's going to come back to bite you at times. That's not really one of those situations. Those situations are like what happened against Notre Dame, where all of a sudden the guy is charging at him, and he doesn't know what to do, and he clears it into him, and now he's caught out of the net. This was like a bobble that was like sent in front down the slot.
I mean, I'd have to rewatch the play to really, you know, get a better grip on it, but...
But they get away with it.
Yeah.
So, hooray. And then Michigan gets a 2-on-1 not long after that. And so Brisson, I think, was the second guy in the 2-on-1. and he gets fed the pass in the slot and doesn't shoot it right away, which, you know, we were all in the room. We were like, shoot it, because it's Brendan Rassan, and he doesn't, which is the first time probably all year he doesn't. Tries to skate in and doesn't really get a shot. A nice defensive play on the guy diving across to break it up. But, yeah, you don't really see him pass on a good shooting opportunity too often.
Not normally, no.
Ohio State then gets their first power play of the night and a stop a charging call that
you don't see. We didn't really see it.
Yeah. Well, you don't really see charging calls a lot.
Charging is not something that gets called much anymore.
No, this isn't basketball. And this is the goal of debate that was going around the room, and everyone had slightly different takes, but I rewatched it and talked about it with our goalie expert that we is a friend of the podcast. And so the shot is taken from the right point, and I thought it hit like the bottom third to half of Portillo's right pad as he sticks it out in sort of a split save that kicks out to the opposite dot and then is fielded by the shooter and shoots the puck right back in and scores. And there's no chance Portillo had on that rebound. The point that our resident goalie expert said is that he didn't get set early enough, and that was the issue that forced the rebound, where if he gets set, he might be able to then read it better and control it, but he didn't and reacted with a reaction save, and reaction saves can't really control rebounds, and it just goes shooting out. Did you have a strong take on if that goal was on him, or you think it was just a little bit of a bad bounce to an open guy?
I mean, I didn't really have a strong take. I didn't really think it was on him, but the thing about goaltending is that it's really, really hard to sort of like armchair quarterback the goaltending position, and I will always defer to people that have a better understanding of it. I mean, most scouts for NHL teams don't scout goalies. Most NHL teams have goalie scouts,
and they
have
specifically just
and then
that.
They have other scouts who do the other stuff. Because if you didn't play goalie, it's really, really hard to sort of know the intricacies of it. It's kind of like, you know, kicking or punting, and like
only certain people are going to be able
like
to tell
most
you.
Of the head coaches don't even know what's going on with the specialists, like the specialists and the coaches.
And you can kind of tell who has bad special teams sometimes, where you're like, maybe the head coach should get away from this. But yeah, so it's 1-1. Off of essentially matching power play goals. Michigan had a couple more chances later on. I thought Samo had a really good look and a quick save by Dobish. He was a guy that we thought was going to be a key for Ohio State to get points this weekend, because he's probably arguably been their best player. He was on Saturday. We'll get into that as the segment goes along. I thought a couple goals that he gave up were a bit soft, but the next thing that we should probably talk about, the last thing is on my note for the first period, is the ice. Is this Lawson?
The ice is even worse in the next game, but
with the whole gouge,
you know, they've just had a lot of issues where they're playing in a stadium that's too big, and it's a half basketball, half hockey arena, and for whatever reason they just could not make it a playable surface on either night, but especially on Saturday, where they had to cut a period short and then try again later because the cement was peeking through. Like, Lord Almighty.
Well, do you think that some of this is... I mean, because we talked to Seth.
I mean, the Western thing is a thing. We've been told, I don't really know about this. I mean, they've had issues with their arena in Ohio State for years.
With ice?
I don't know about it with ice, just in general. Like, there's just a litany of problems
with that arena
related to that arena.
Seems like a nice arena, but
it's just not. They have one arena that's way too small, and they have one arena that's way too big, and there are issues with two sport arenas, especially if it's not super professional. Keeping the ice at the right temperature and all that stuff,
and
which I think was the issue Saturday, in part because they did basketball in the afternoon.
That is true. And it just so happens that like a sludgier game is probably going to benefit Ohio State a little bit more.
Possibly.
I mean, I think that did for Western to some extent when they were... And obviously, if they're doing that and that's actually a thing, then that would lend one to believe that. But either way, So we ended the second period, and this is where we can talk about Dobish a little bit, but there's a shot, I want to say, from Holtz from the point, and it, like, Dobish thinks he covers it, he thinks he saves it, but it kind of, like, trickles through his pads and then stops, and Nolan Moyle is right there for an easy tap-in goal to give Michigan a 2-1 lead. And, yeah, he probably just misplayed that a little bit, but that was goal one where I thought, you know, in a tight game where you've already alternated power play goals, and, I mean, you've got your one goal, Ohio State doesn't score a ton of goals, like, you know, you're pretty much going to have to be pretty clean from here on out, and that one kind of gave Michigan the lead that they would hold for a while.
But, I mean, Dobish did make a lot of big saves throughout the rest of the period.
He did. That is true. I have multiple notes written down of big save on blank Michigan player. Beniers had a chance right after that. I think that was a 3-on-1 that went just wide. Michigan didn't get a ton of odd man rushes, and partially probably due to the ice and partially due to a couple other things, but they did have this one. This was probably one of their best of the weekend. It didn't work out. Brisson hit Estapa, and he had a turnaround shot that Dobish made a big save. Lambert hit the post. So Michigan, like, we're approaching halfway through the game here, and Michigan is getting chances. Like, they're creating good opportunities. Like I said, one hit the post. Dobish is making saves. But the offense so far, despite the ice quality, you have to like what they're doing.
Yeah.
And then at the other end, so this was a weird play where, and Holtz hasn't been back since, but he gets hit or falls awkwardly on his arm and is down, like down yeah, behind the ice, and the play doesn't stop. So it's a little like soccer in that sense where, okay, you can't just, you know, any sort of injury stop and, oh, okay, so make sure everyone's okay. So I get the play on a little bit, but it did carry on for a while, long enough that a Mike Legg attempt was made. It didn't succeed, but a guy standing alone behind the net and tries to wrap it in or bank it off. Maybe he tried to bank it off of Portillo. And then eventually, I believe, the ref blows the whistle. I don't think there was a cover. And then Holtz is down, and that's the last that we saw of him for the weekend.
Yeah, that's a tough one because you never want to cut the play short, especially when a team is in the offensive zone and has an opportunity to score, and you want to let the game just kind of continue. But,
at some point, if someone... It's one thing if a guy is in pain but moving and, like, trying to crawl back to the bench. It's kind of another thing if he's sort of lying motionless.
Yeah, he's just kind of a body in the background.
I mean, like, he could get run over. Like, the puck could go back there and someone just runs him over and he can't get out of the way. So, yeah. We haven't heard any updates on him. He did not play on Saturday, so that's not a good sign. Not that he's been Michigan's best defenseman, but at this point, when Power's gone, Hughes is going to be gone. We didn't see Truscott for the second half of the Saturday game. I mean, Michigan's starting to get a little thin on defense.
Yeah, you could definitely use another body.
Right after that, Truscott just gets set on fire, and Portillo made a big save to keep it 2-1. And then we have sort of the controversial moment where Karinen checks a guy that they say he hit him in the head, and I wasn't 100% certain that he hit him in the head. I know there's the indirect versus direct contact to the head versus, you know, minor and major. It looked like the guy even dropped his head. I know this isn't like football where you have like the targeting rules of, oh, is he a runner or is he, you know, whatever, did he duck into it, all of that. But I mean, it just seemed like maybe we're all just triggered because, you know, someone on Twitter was basically saying, I think it was our sponsor, Michigan Mograd, who said, it's not a Michigan hockey game without a 5-minute major. And it kind of felt like that.
I mean, we've litigated this before in previous weeks, and I'm kind of where I am on it the same way I am with targeting, in that, like, I don't know. Ask me, like, is this targeting? Was this the right call? I'm like, I don't know.
Do you think
it's... I have no idea what the right call is because we don't ever get explanations. It's just referee roulette, and then we move on.
Do you think that Michigan is becoming, like, a team that has that reputation now?
Which is bizarre because they are the least physical team in the conference, probably.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, whenever it comes up, I just tweet, like, the Big Ten, like, Michigan is the Broad Street Bullies in the eyes of the Big Ten. Like, the way they have been assessed these penalties would make you believe they are the most vicious and dirty team to ever play hockey, and therefore need to be...
I mean, there were some...
It's just very weird.
There's a couple this year that have been clearly, yep, that's got to be it. But there's also been a number of 50-50 calls that, like, I don't think Michigan has had one of the same caliber as that one that they were the victims on, or Blankenberg was against Duluth earlier in the year, right?
Or the one that wasn't against Wisconsin.
Right, but so those were obvious. I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying that all of Michigan's are phantom. I'm just saying that, like, they're more on the 50-50 side of, like, not these vicious attacks where you're trying to rip a guy's head off. And that's the part that I get, as, like, it seems like some of this should be intent.
Yeah.
But I guess it's not, because it's refereeing roulette, which is what you mentioned about. I'm not really sure what you can do about it. I mean, you can't play less physical because it's still a physical game. But to some extent, you do have to be wary, right? I mean, you can't just have a guy get ejected every game and give another team 5 minutes of all-you-can-eat power play time that now, you know, in a game like this where you have a one-goal game, I mean, now Ohio State gets to get back into it.
Right. I mean, it was definitely a potential turning point, but then it wasn't.
Right. And Michigan may have even had one of the better chances, as I think Pasta had a chance shorthanded. And then, so then the frustrating thing is just after that, Hughes is carrying the puck up the ice shorthanded, crosses the midline or is about to enter the zone and is clearly just, like, taken down from behind. Like, the guy, like, I don't know if it's a hook or a trip. You probably could have called about three different things, but there's no call. So that, to me, gets to be the thing where, like, all right, you can label me a conspiracy theorist if you want, but, like, it seems like conspiracy facts in this point, because I don't know how that's not a trip if you're going to call these other things by the letter of the law.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
I would say so, yes.
It seemed like it. Portillo made a double save later on. I thought he had a nice game. We could even just pin the first goal on him if somebody needs to and say, oh, that's his fault. And even counting that, I thought he played really, really well and made a lot of other saves and made a lot of other nice plays. I know he had a couple of his wanderings, but he also has played, I think, there's an argument that he's been Michigan's best player, maybe not, but in the top couple anyway, and has kept them in games, especially with the way that their defense has been inconsistent.
I would say that.
Beecher had a couple of nice shot blocks at the end of it where he blocked one, it was returned to sender, and then he blocked another one. Truscott and Hughes each got clears. The power play on that 5 minute power play for Ohio State, the penalty kill I should say, was really good for Michigan. Something I think they were actually good on all weekend for the most part. Brisson had a chance. Estapa had a huge turnaround bomb that Dobish saved. Duke had an open backdoor chance after that, but he was kind of facing the wrong way and couldn't get his skates.
He wasn't really in the proper wheelhouse either.
Yeah, but he was there. They had another chance of a guy open, just couldn't convert it. And then Portillo had his second turnover behind the net, and of course when that happens now, you get everyone on Twitter is just like, oh, what's going on? Eric, no. And I mean, we talked about it, but, like, it's going to happen. And I'm always going to want the guy that can play the puck, that can make something happen, especially with a guy who doesn't really make a ton of mistakes. They get close, and he had the one goal against Notre Dame that was pretty bad. But for the most part, it's going to take something special or a huge gaffe in order for the other team to take advantage.
It was definitely not what you want in terms of two in the same game. That's what I'll say.
That's fair. And then Sam Moskevich had a really nice move to get a shot on Dobish right near the end of the second, and Dobish made the save. And this is, I think, the point that you were making is, you know, the one goal that he gave up that Moyle scored was on him, but he also saved about three or four really nice ones just in the second period alone.
Yeah.
Moving into the third, Pasta got a good chance alone in the slot, and again Dobish makes the save, and I wrote down several times he's just saving the game, because he is. These are good chances. Michigan is finding a way inside of Ohio State's defense to create chances, and their goalie is bailing him out, kind of like Portillo has done many times throughout the year. And then we get another situation where Portillo somehow gets jumped on from the back after the play and gets cross-checked in the back of the head. I believe it was Leslie we wrote down that committed that. And, I mean, this is just Ohio State trying to make something happen at some point, right? Because they're not able to break through. They're trailing in a game. It's a sludgy game, and they're just trying to get under Michigan's skin, because Michigan has shown this year that, you know, if you play physical and maybe even cross the line a little bit, they can get rattled.
Yeah, I'll save the broader talk about the physicality and stuff for the second game. But, you know, this situation with Portillo is kind of what led to that, in that there was a lot of issues in this game of guys sort of getting tight in the crease and knocking him over and that sort of thing. And then a guy lands on him, and, you know, Portillo is just kind of pretty angry about that.
Well, I think he lost his helmet. Yeah. I mean, that's dangerous.
And so it escalates then on the next night.
And the thing, and this is the other thing, is like, that is not the part of the game of hockey that suits Michigan really well. Like, they aren't a team that generally goes buzzing into the crease and is blowing up goalies, at least on purpose, and like trying to rattle guys. It does not seem to me. It's certainly a lot of teams that do that, and there is, you know, some allowance for that in sports of like trying to get under people's skin a little bit. There's leeway there that referees give, but then there becomes a line where, you know, hitting a guy in the back of the head with a stick, I mean, you could argue that that should be 5 in a game.
You can make that case, yeah.
Being very diplomatic today, Alex. So Michigan has held on to this lead for a lot of the game, and then they get their forever shift, but not from the Beniers KJ line, from an Ohio State line. Michigan just can't get it clear. They have a couple chances to get it out. Granowitz had an easy one, I thought, just sort of tried to make a centering pass to start a transition chance instead of just getting the puck clear. It stayed in the zone. Portillo made a really nice save. And then Summers had a nice shot block, and I think it like hit his hand or hit his leg, and you could see a wrist, and you could see, because he dropped down, you could see the puck go back to the shooter, and you could see him just in pain after that. And the next shot, the guy was able to elude Summers and beat Portillo basically from the top of the circle, which is a good look. And that, to me, is not on Portillo. He makes a save, gets a shot block. They can't get the puck out.
Well, because you had the first shot block, Summers was a little dinged up. He didn't come out to challenge the shot, which was
the second one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that makes it 2-2, and you're like, all right, here we go. And you get a couple chances either way. Michigan had a 2-on-1, couldn't convert. Ohio State had a breakaway that was shot high. And then with about 5 minutes to go, Michigan gets another gritty goal. Pasta finished a Morgan chance. I thought Morgan made a nice play coming down the right wing, beating his man, and then shooting the puck basically along the goal line all the way across. And Pasta was at the back door. Not dissimilar to Blankenberg's opening goal.
Yeah, but this is kind of just thrown in front, as opposed to like a pass, right? And
yeah,
it's just kind of banged in from there.
And while we're all taking that note and tweeting about it, Brisson gets a poke in by the far post. This is one, the second one I thought was on Dobish.
Yeah, this one was a not great one.
Where I don't think Brisson had a real quote-unquote shot. He was just kind of jamming away at it and then ended up poking it through.
Yeah.
And Dobish had the post. Like, it wasn't like he was late getting there. He had it, and it still went through.
Yeah.
And that's goal number two that you could argue he'll probably want back. Ohio State pulls their goalie with about 3.5 to go, which is early, but is the right move.
Yep.
And Portillo makes a few shutdown saves at the end before Garrett Van Wy gets a empty netter to make it 5-2.
And that's pretty much the wrap on it. I mean, it was a pretty close game, but Michigan dug deep and managed to get a win despite the shorthanded roster. So it definitely sent good vibes overall.
The last thing I want you to address in this segment before we move on is, and because it becomes relevant for segment two, is Michigan was leaving guys open below the goal line. And you had a theory as to that was a
power play.
And what... Walk us through what you were seeing there.
Well, they let the pass to the guy at the end line on the opposing power play they let that pass go fine. The idea behind it is that if you give it down to him and you sort of keep him stationary, he's not super threatening. Because if you cut off the passing angles, there's not a lot he can do there. And then his only option is then to shoot from a kind of obscure angle where your goalie has the post. Especially for a guy like Portillo with his size, when he's holding the post, you feel pretty good about that. And so the only way that you then have the potential for it to go haywire is if the guy, you know, has some really good finishing skill, right? Can drive in and like go between the legs, and then kind of like what Brisson did at one point earlier this year, right?
Yeah.
Where you kind of like dangle and then go over the shoulder or something like that. And Ohio State just doesn't have that talent of finishers. However, the plan also goes awry if your defenseman isn't willing to pinch down
eventually
when the guy really drives the net, right?
Yeah.
If you just let him shoot from that side angle, you're fine. If you let him drive and wrap it around the goalie, that's, you know, you have to take that space away. So you keep him there, you take away the passing angle, then when he makes his move, the defenseman, I think, needs to slide down. And in the second game, they weren't doing that enough.
Right. And that's sort of the wrap on this game and this segment, is that Michigan did that for the Friday game, and we'll address what happened in the Saturday game next.
If you find yourself in the penalty box in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man arguing your case, call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458, or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
Friday game, Saturday game, they probably could not have started a whole lot worse, unfortunately, as Portillo is forced into making a number of saves right off the bat, and then Michigan takes a penalty, and Ohio State is already on a power play, and this is the situation that we were talking about at the end of the first segment, where Treloar is below the goal line, gets the puck, and then, like you said, if he shoots from a sharp angle there, we're okay with Portillo on the post, but he's allowed to therefore walk out and in front of the crease as Jack Summers stays too high for too long, does not pinch down to close that door, and Portillo reaches with a poke check, doesn't get it, the puck jumps over a stick and then goes inside the far post. You thought maybe Portillo could have done a little bit better. I was more on, like, hey, where's the defenseman?
Yeah, I mean, they needed extra help, obviously, but I don't love just having him get wrapped like that, but whatever. They definitely, you know, he needed assistance once that was happening.
Yeah. So it's 1-0 Ohio State early. Michigan then gets another couple of chances. Beecher had not a great look, but a shot from the slot on a 3-on-2. And there's another shot that they got that Dobish made a save on. And then the odd man rushes started for Ohio State as they got a 2-on-1, and Portillo was able to save that one. Then right after that, a 3-on-2 for Ohio State. And this one was pretty bad as Dunlap just went right by Hughes and just spun him basically like a top. It looked like Karanen, who was his, I guess, partner, or at least on this particular shift, on the left, kind of started to leave his guy or his half and get over to make up for Hughes. And the pass then gets through to the guy that Karanen kind of left, I guess,
yeah,
and is tipped in then. I'm not really sure what Karanen's supposed to do. He could stay on his own guy and just say, hey, you do your own job, and then the guy walks in and maybe Portillo can stop the shot in that sense. That's an argument. He also sees his partner just gets lit up, so he's going to help.
Yeah.
And he's kind of caught in no man's land. hard to really blame Karen in there, but when your guy gets beat, when your partner gets beat, I mean, you're just sort of hung out to dry. And Portillo had no chance on this goal, as this was just, I mean, it was passed right across his face, and he was expecting a shot, and it was an easy dunk goal, I guess. It was 2-0 pretty much.
Yeah, was it not? I mean, the entire first period was a debacle, basically.
Well, the first 10 minutes or so were, for sure. And then right after that, so it's 2-0, Summers tries a square pass from dot to dot in his own end, and it doesn't quite make it to his partner, where it's picked off, and basically it's a breakaway from half of zone in, and Portillo makes the save to keep it from being 3-0. Otherwise, we probably could have packed up and gone home at that point, because where Michigan's shorthanded at this point, we didn't mention, well, we mentioned earlier, but Holtz is also missing this game, so they're dressing.
Well, and they're coming off a game where they were skating with 5 for about 35 minutes after the Karenin ejection.
And the Holtz injury.
Yeah.
So they're already down a bunch of guys. Mel said later that they also had some people who were sick and everything, so they're just not in greatest shape, and all of a sudden it's almost 3-0 early on. And then, you know, things start to pile up. You can see Portillo gets frustrated because he ends up taking a penalty, hitting a guy late after the play. I think twice even he, like, reached out and popped him a couple times, and Ohio State actually didn't get anything from that power play. They did score 2 on the weekend, but the sheer volume of chances Ohio State was going to get throughout this game was going to probably even it out, and I would say that Michigan's penalty kill on the weekend was maybe their best segment of hockey. I think they gave up 2 in about 8 or 9 chances, so it's livable.
Yeah.
Especially given some of the other things that happened at times. Maybe got a little lucky on this one. Ohio State guy passed on a pretty open look and didn't shoot, but I guess that also happens on power plays from time to time. And then my power went out. So I missed the next chunk of the game as we're trying to scramble to get the cable and internet going, and I couldn't do a whole lot. My phone connected to, not via Wi-Fi. So I eventually was able to get something out, but I'm not really sure what happened after that. Do you have anything that happened for the next few minutes? Because I have no notes over here.
I mean, it just was continually a lot of the same stuff again in terms of just Michigan being just kind of chased all over.
Ohio State did get a third power play in this period. Yeah. There was a one-timer save, and that was about it. Then they hit the bar later on, and you're just like, this game is teetering on the edge of even watchability at this point. I mean, you know, Michigan didn't play well, but they also had a lot of reasons why they couldn't and shouldn't and wouldn't play well. So it's hard to blame them completely. There are some things later on that I didn't like the way they reacted, but it was a tough situation, and they hung in there for this period and then even for the next.
One more note about that second goal that just came back to me. The play starts when Michigan is in the offensive zone and Moyle's coming down the wing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was Dunlap, the guy who scored the goal, who hits him and knocks him off the puck. And then after that, hits him again. And
when he doesn't have the puck.
Yes. Like he knocks him off the puck and then he like just delivers another check. And that's the kind of thing, it just stuck in my mind because that's the sort of thing that I would like see be called interference.
So the second time he hit him, did Dunlap have the puck?
No.
Okay, so he hits him, knocks him off the puck.
And then
so
the puck now, is just like that, and the play's so going no out the other ice, yeah, the other way.
And he hits him again.
Yeah, and then, I mean, Moyle got really mad and started kind of like, you know, thrashing back. And so that's the sort of stuff that colored the events that are going to happen, you know, in the second and third period.
I mean, that is the definition of an interference.
It's pretty sort of classic of the sort of clutching and grabbing and that kind of thing, right? So,
and Michigan sort of had to deal with that on night 2 of a lot of these games throughout the season, which has been not great. But Michigan finally does get a power play. I didn't know that could happen in this game off of, I think we thought, a phantom penalty.
Well, the first period also, didn't it end with 2:27 to go in the first period?
Oh, yeah, we can talk
about it. They went to the benches, and then they came back, and
That's why my notes are screwed up, because I put that in under second period. But yeah, so Brisson is trying to enter the zone, and it looks like he takes himself out. I didn't think that the guy, like, committed a penalty, but his skate then digs into the... I think it's actually on the blue line. Digs into the blue line, and a chunk of ice comes ripping out, and you can... like, they zoom in on it, and you can see the concrete.
Yeah. Not great.
I mean, and then they're... And so then somebody comes over and puts it back in and sprays some water on it, and they're like, all right, we're going to get going again. And we just started looking like, I don't think you can play on that, can you?
No.
Like, that would be... potentially extremely dangerous. So then finally they come to their senses and realize, all right, we're just gonna end the period now because there's like 2.5 minutes left. So it's sort of like when the glass breaks and everyone's gonna be stuck there for a while. So they just we come out, and then you play after the intermission, you play the last 2.5 minutes and then jump right into it. And that was the time that Michigan had their power play. And, you know, right away, like, I thought, you know, we could debate this, but I thought Samuel takes a interference call that I just thought was him being lazy skating back. Like, he's not going full speed back to get the puck as it comes out of the zone, and the guy...
Well, he was worried about shorting a chance the other way, which is why he interferes.
Right, but if he's skating harder, he stays ahead of the guy, because Samuel is one of the better skaters on the ice at all times.
Perhaps.
And the guy starts to pass him, so he takes the interference call, which at that point is the right play, but maybe could have been prevented. And Ohio State gets nothing on their fourth power play, which is still in the first period, or maybe even in the second, early second. It's tough at this point. Michigan gets another power play after that. They didn't get much on it. And my thought a little bit was that Michigan did get some power play chances, and they looked okay on a couple of them, but on most of them, like, you had 3 or 4 guys out that are normally on the power play. So when you only have a few guys left that are used to playing power play time, sometimes you split them up into 2 units so that you don't have basically a bunch of guys who have no idea what to do on the power play on the ice at the same time. And it just looked like guys were not in sync. They weren't familiar with who else was out there. It just looked like they hadn't been used to practicing, because in all honesty, a lot of them were put into positions that they're not used to being in. Is that a thing?
Potentially, yeah. I think Ohio State also did proper scouting on some of Michigan's favorite plays, which they went to.
Like, even, like, zone entries, though. Because, I mean, it wasn't even like they were, like, getting shots that were blocked. It was, like... They couldn't really get anything in for the zone.
Yeah.
And then maybe the biggest play of the game happens. Mike Pasta breaks in alone. It's 2-0. And Dobish just stoned him cold. And that would have been a big goal, because Michigan was, unlike Friday, where they were getting chances, they were creating good offensive opportunities and breaking down Ohio State's defense, it did not really happen a lot on Saturday. Part of it was because of the discombobulated nature of the second period and then all the power plays to Ohio State in the first period, but it wasn't like they were slicing through them, and this was a really good chance in a time when, yeah, you miss breakaways, but this was one I think that Michigan really needed to kind of get back into it, because they could manufacture a goal here or there, but they were going to need two, and this was as close as you were going to get.
Well, considering especially that the next 30 minutes or so are just like a penalty chaos situation.
Yeah. So Dobish there saves that game. It's 4-on-4 again. At this point, I remember taking notes. I'm just like, I'm really having trouble like counting the penalties and counting the advantages and like how many shots are they getting and stuff, because it's just like one team will get one, they'll have, you know, 45 seconds, and the other team gets one, so then you have like a minute 4-on-4, and then someone else has. And so there's not really – some of these chances aren't even really power play chances, because you don't really have that long, and then if you lose the opening faceoff, now you have like 15 seconds, and it's – it's like you said, it's just super all over the place. It wasn't enjoyable to watch. It wasn't like a team had 2 minutes of power play and the other team has 2 minutes of power play and there's some flow. It was just very, I don't know, so many whistles, also a lot of reviews.
Yeah, I mean, the game, around this point is really when the referees just lost control of the game, and that continues into the third period. And you know, I think the issue that really sparked this is a lack of attention towards the crease. And the fact is that college hockey has always been a less physical game than the NHL. You don't have a lot of sort of Cronwall types who are out there, you know, delivering thundering checks at the blue line, that sort of thing. Like, think back in this just last 5 years, when there are really, you know, physical games where there's a lot of fighting and stuff that gets out of hand in the NCAA level, where does it come from? Unless it's like a really dirty hit, like the, you know, Fadia Von Raby thing from a few years back, it tends to be around the net. That's where the Cutler Martin fight happened. That's the only time you really get it happening. It's always the same script. It's the goalies saved it, and the guy comes up and he starts jabbing, you know, late after the whistle, and then the other guys jump in. I mean, we've seen this script a million times. And when you've got a game like this in a rivalry format, with a team like Ohio State, who over Steve Rolick's tenure has traditionally been the most physical, most aggressively violent team in the conference, if you're a referee, and especially after the previous night, I think you got to come into the game and basically say, okay, you know, if you're a forward and you're touching the goalie, you're going to the box. You know, that's off limits.
So you
don't even approach, you know, you got to stamp that out real quick.
So you don't think that's part of hockey? Because there's going to be a crowd of people that are going to say, hey, well, that's bumping and kicking afterwards. That's part of hockey, man.
I mean, I'm someone who likes physicality. That sort of stuff, though, you can easily eliminate and sort of just, you know, once the whistle blows, if you're still doing it, then we're going to put you in the box. And that, I think, would stamp it out pretty quickly if they had made it clear. Now, there were also the issues where, I mean, overall on the weekend, Portillo gets bowled over about eight times over the course of the weekend. And part of it was not necessarily Ohio State, it was the ice. Because when you come down the wing with the puck, and then you come in on net, and you want to do basically any move besides just shooting straight away, you have to go on your edges, right? You go on your edges to curl around the goalie to then make your move, whatever. And when you go on your edges and the ice is slush, you lose your balance really quickly. And in also, there were cases where Summers or another defenseman provided check as well.
We'll get to that one.
And so there's just a lot of factors going on. But the result of it is Portillo is routinely getting pulled into.
Yeah.
He's getting mad. And then you haven't asserted that the crease is off limits because you let it go previously. So then the next time it happens, then just everything breaks loose. And, you know, then sort of the way the game spirals and guys are just going at it all the time and it's just out of control. And they, you know, so one thing you cannot do as a referee is lose control of the game. And they lost control of the game, just like plain and simple. And that's why the third period is just kind of memorable for just like nonstop, you know, nonsense and penalties. And then, of course, culminating in that 6-1 goal where Nolan Moyle responds to a goal just by jumping in and turning to punch the guy
who's joining the celebration.
When that's happening, something is going wrong. And that was kind of the issue, is not asserting that, right? It's kind of like in football, right? Where if you're in a rivalry game and on the first drive, you know, under the pile or whatever, you know, there's kicking going on or something underneath, you just throw the flags, right? You say offsetting personal fouls, but it gives those players personal fouls.
So
it puts them,
so they can't do it anymore.
So they can't do it anymore. And you assert your control early to stop that from happening. And they waited way, way, way too long to try and, because once you lost control, you can hand out 50 penalties. It's not going to get the game back in control.
Because the emotions are already cut open. And
so,
plus, it's, at that point, it's a blowout. And
yeah.
I mean, the thing is that, you know, before we even get to some of this that we just talked about, like, Michigan gets back into the game because right at the end of the second period, they get a power play and have a couple chances. Edwards end up making a bad pass, and Portillo had to bail him out. But then the next one, they get another one because they're starting to take over the game. Like, their skill is starting to become a little bit more relevant and, you know, get them into better chances. And I think Pasta Fed, Blankenberg, in the sort of the slot slash house there area, and he beat Dobish, and or it was actually, that was Sammo, I'm sorry, I had that one wrong. Sammo hit Blankenberg as he's flying down sort of the slot slash house, and it's 2-1 in a game that felt not out of reach for Michigan, but they just weren't creating a lot, and the game was so disjointed. And now it's 2-1, and you're like, I mean, you and I were like texting back and forth, and you're like, I mean, we're not out of this, and we might be able to get this to overtime and steal some points in a game that's just gone off the rails. But the best part of the goal was not even the goal. It was the fact that then Blankenberg skated behind the net, and all of a sudden there's a dog in the first row. So he starts waving to the dog because, I mean, you know, he can't pet it because there's glass there. But the dog seemed happy to see him.
Yeah, I mean, after that period, I was kind of like, well, you know, you can find a way to just grind one more goal out, and hopefully Portillo keeps you in it, because, you know, you're shorthanded already from the roster standpoint. Then you have the injuries, then you have, you know, skating with five defensemen the previous night, and then Triscott has been hurt in this game, so now you're, you know, down another one already, and the guys are tired, and, I mean, it's basically just like, what do you have in the tank? And it turns out they had about 10 minutes left in the tank, and not 20, so...
Right. Yeah, and that, and it was just kind of the same old little things where, you know, Beecher had a chance to get the puck out, and it was a sort of an easy play, but he just didn't clear it in time, and it gets turned over at the blue line, and Portillo makes a save, and just Quinn Preston is sitting right there and taps in the rebound. It's 3-1. There was kind of a lot of standing around, we wrote down, but, you know, it was a longer shift, and they kind of got stuck in the zone, and that does happen when your legs tend to die at the end of a shift, and it was 3-1, and that was probably it. You know, maybe you think, okay, they can mount one last charge, but then right away, Person just had a pretty bad gap control, and guy walks in and scores, and it's 4-1, and then it's over, and then even, what, 30 seconds later, 20 seconds later, it's 5-1 on an open look from the house. And, you know, Portillo maybe could have saved that. But at that point, I'm just like, I mean, he's probably done. Everyone's done. This game is over. They're exhausted. Just go home. And that's when sort of all the stuff that we talked about started happening was, and that was where I was like, I didn't, you mentioned that the referees didn't bring it back under control. And you're probably right about a lot of that. I'm still going to sit there and say, look, you know, if Ohio State's going to goad you into all this stuff, you don't have to take the bait. And they did. And, you know, there were numerous penalties handed out. There's a bunch of scrums afterwards. I mean, Michigan has higher goals on their season checklist than getting into a fight with Ohio State in a blowout game, I think. I mean, you know, I know it's tough in rivalry games, believe me. I you know, been watching this for a long, long time, and I know these players have been playing in it. But it just was sort of a bad look to get into all these fights. And I mean, yeah, there's some blame can be shifted to the refs, but I mean, personal responsibility too, a little bit.
I mean, it's you know, things just kind of spiral in those sort of situations. And, you know, it's going to make for an interesting series when Ohio State comes back, you know, in late February.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, you don't, we don't want that. Like, you just want to play hockey against them, because if in a hockey game, it feel on decent ice, it feels like Michigan's going to have the advantage. But you start doing this stuff with the roughness, and then, oh, now this guy, you know, was mad because we didn't call a penalty, so now he gets a penalty for, like, punching a guy in the face. And, like, now all of a sudden, you know, you're not just playing hockey. Now you're managing tempers and you're managing emotions. And that is part of sports, but what Michigan wants to do in all of these games against these teams is just play hockey. Because if you play against these bigger, rougher, tougher teams, or teams that, you know, want to play super physical, that's going to be not to Michigan's strength. They want to have speed, they want to skate, they want to pass, they want to move, and they'll score goals and beat you. And other teams are going to try to goad them into these, like, WWE matches that it turned into a little bit.
Pretty much. I mean, Michigan doesn't want to be in these sorts of situations, but
I just find it frustrating that they keep finding themselves. Not even to their own, like your point, like with the clutching and grabbing that is like pretty much all been eliminated from the NHL, I would say, for the most part.
Yeah, there's still a good amount of it.
Too much?
Certainly with McDavid and other players.
Well, yeah, that's true. And maybe that's just a thing.
I mean, it's a lot better than it once was, but it's still there.
But Michigan's had to deal with what, how many interference penalties against Wisconsin and against Notre Dame and then even against Ohio State that just are like, well, we're trying to keep it fair. Too bad you're faster. Anyway. So, 3 points apiece. Another weekend in Splitsville is the name for our podcast, and that's kind of what it was. That's exactly what it was.
I mean, in totality, when you look at the scope of the season...
So I want to do the review now.
This results, I don't know, it's pretty in line with reasonable. Yeah. I mean, I think that overall, the Western results this weekend and the Minnesota results are all fine to me. I mean, you know, shorthanded on the road, you split with that team, you split with a really good Minnesota team, and, you know, you essentially split loss slash tie, I guess, OT win tie, 0.55. win, whatever, against Western, you know, yeah, that's also a really good team. Those all square. I mean, I'm, you know, whatever. Yeah. That's very reasonable. I think overall the only things that really stand out are the, you know, the Notre Dame games and then that Wisconsin loss.
Well, the thing about Notre Dame is, like, you had two goal leads.
And you lost a game to Wisconsin where you gave up 4 goals to a team that can't score.
Yeah, some pretty bad turnovers. But, yeah, I agree with that. And all three of those games are EOS. And you're like, that's not where this stuff should happen. It did. We'll run through the Big Ten really quickly before we go into a little bit of cleaning up our thoughts on Michigan for the season as we go through section by section. But Penn State and Wisconsin played, and Wisconsin won 4-1, and Penn State won 5-4 in overtime. So that's, what, 4 points to Wisconsin and two, yeah, to Penn State. How much do you have to say about that?
Nothing really.
Me neither.
I mean, that's a bottom tier matchup.
Notre Dame beat Michigan State 3-2. They were down 2-0, and we were like, oh, that game's over.
That's an interesting one because they start Pierce Charleston, who had been the
State
Big, yes, who had been the Big Ten as opposed to the other Pierce Charleston, but.
Because everyone knows who Pierce Charleston is.
Who had been the Big Ten second or third star of the preceding week, and I haven't followed their season too closely, but he also is a lot worse than DeRitter in terms of just their raw numbers. You know, I don't know exactly what had happened. I didn't watch that game to know how well he had played the preceding weekend. But to me, if you're MSU and you're kind of on the bubble-ish, you're bubble out a little bit right now, but you're respectable again, you're in 500. If you crank out some wins, you have a shot. I just don't think you can be starting the 9-10 goalie versus the 9-45 goalie, like, at all. Just frankly. And no matter how well he played the previous weekend, if the other guy's healthy, I think you have to ride him.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pregame decision, and they had a 2-goal lead against the team. Well, I mean, Notre Dame scored.
They got a 2-goal lead, but they got it very early.
Yeah.
They got it 3 minutes or 4 minutes in, and then they had to protect it for a very long time. But one of those goals they gave up was real rough. Mm. And another one they kind of got, I don't know, they got majored in a five-minute fashion. I think it was a slew foot on one of the Kriegers. Some of the MSU people I follow online were kind of mad.
Sparties were mad?
I don't know. I didn't watch it, really, so I can't say. But that one hurts if you're at Michigan State, especially the way you play to give up that kind of lead.
The next night they did bounce back and win, but in overtime, so 4 points to Notre Dame and two to Michigan State. It was 1-0 in overtime. Wow, what a game. 6 goals.
It's the game you expect.
Yeah.
You
know? That's it, because Minnesota doesn't play, and we should talk about this for a minute. Minnesota doesn't play on the last week before going into the WJC. I mean, you made a point on Twitter, and I think I retweeted you, that Michigan needs to do this too, where you say, hey, once it starts to get close to time when we're going to lose players to national team camps,
like, so the Minnesota,
don't cut our roster.
So the Minnesota thing is, that's a Big Ten. I mean, that's just something that needs to be communicated with the conference, right?
Would they care?
There's a way you could get around it. I mean, let's just say instead of playing you know, a non-con game earlier in the season, we can play a Big Ten game then, right? Or instead of playing UMass that second week in January, we can play a Big Ten game there. There's a ways you could get around it. And, if, you know, there's only 7 teams in the league. Like, yeah. if one team really stood up and sort of complained about that. I mean, I'm less mad about that. I mean, that's just unfortunate. I mean, I think the way the Big Ten schedule operates, the team that got that bye could have very easily been MSU, you know, who would have had nothing to gain from it, to have a bye that weekend. I mean, I'm a lot more mad about the GLI.
Are you using air quotes?
Yes.
This is not a video cast.
In 3 weeks' time, because that's completely self-inflicted. There is no reason to be playing those games. None.
Not this year.
It's not the GLI anymore. I mean, I have a column coming out about this tomorrow, today, whatever, whenever you're reading this, maybe 3 weeks ago.
Listening to this.
Depending on when you're listening. But, I mean, it's basically, calling it the GLI is like, you know, it's basically the total, the contents have been changed, right?
Yeah.
But the name is still there. It's like how MTV is still music television, but doesn't show music videos anymore. I mean, it's the
MTV.
Great Lakes Invitational, except there's no invitations. It's a home game for two hosts. There's no trophy anymore. It's not a tournament. It's two games on December 29th and 30th that aren't included in the season ticket packages, that are on BTN Plus. No one will be watching. What are we doing here? And why are we playing these games? No one is making you do this. Minnesota has scheduled 34 games. Michigan scheduled 36. The difference? Minnesota is not playing when their roster is not there. No one is making you do this. If this were still the GLI, there would be a part of me saying you should still do it because I thought it was a cool event that was good for this, you know, for hockey in the state of Michigan. That's not what this is anymore. This is not a tradition thing. It's games that don't need to be played. If you're going to play, then I think you can have some debate simply because the argument then would be, well, let's schedule Mercyhurst. Well, the problem is you still have a gutted roster, and if you're doing a rational choice model of decision-making here, and you go and you do your expected values, right? Let's say you have an 80% chance of beating Mercyhurst. Your expected utility of beating Mercyhurst, let's just say in the abstract, is 2. Your expected utility of losing to Mercyhurst is like negative 50. And so if it's an 80% chance of getting 2, that's whatever, 1.8 or something, and it's a 20% chance of getting negative 50, that's like, you know, whatever,
why even play?
Negative 10, add those two up, your expected value of playing that game is like a negative 8 point something. Whereas in this situation, your expected value of playing Western is probably like negative 2. So if you have to play something, I'd still rather schedule a team like that. The point is, you don't have to play.
Except that you might lose some comparisons if you lose that game in the pairwise.
It's still better than losing to a really bad team.
So it's basically the lesser of two evils, but all those evils could theoretically have been avoided altogether.
Yeah, you don't have to play.
Right.
I mean, some of those ECAC teams play like 20 games and make the tournament. Like,
Harvard starts their season in like December.
This is not the NCAA football where, you know, playing the same number of games as the other teams is really important. There's no reason to do this. It's very dumb. And hopefully they win one of those games because they will have a shot, no question. Probably, especially against Tech, I would say. I mean, they will still have talent. They'll still have guys. They'll still have a shot to win those games. And I think you just hope for a draw and then are just kind of like, why are we doing this?
I hope they beat Western.
I mean, that would be better.
Yeah. So let's just run through some numbers for Michigan, and then we'll walk through just kind of quick takes on different parts of their game so far. They are second, despite all of our complaining and whining and babying, they are second in pairwise, so most of that may not even be completely necessary. They're eighth in Corsi, which is about what you figure, like top
end. I would like it higher than that, but...
That's a fair point. 28% on the power play. Seems
I would like it a little higher than that given the talent level.
82% on the penalty kill.
Would like it higher than that.
They have 7 guys that are scoring over 0.75 points per game.
Sure.
That's a lot. And Portillo's numbers are 2.5 GAA and 0.913. And my only defense of him there is that like he has to make a lot of like tough saves.
Yeah, I think that I mean, obviously, if we're talking about where does the second half improvement come from, it comes from the team defense.
Yep. So
your offense is only going to improve so much.
Yeah. Because they're scoring goals.
They're scoring goals. They're top 5 in goals per game. Again, probably should be a little bit higher. But you know, maybe marginal improvement there, but the real ability is the ability to improve, you know, team defense, because they do, we have seen at junctures this season really good team defense. It just comes and goes, and the optimistic take is that it comes when they need it to come, that in their best games, or, you know, their games against their best opponents have been when their team defense was generally the strongest. I mean, I think their best defensive weekend in total was the Minnesota State and Minnesota Duluth weekend. And then I think, you know, maybe in a single game performance is probably the second night against Minnesota. So they're capable of turning it on against really good teams. It's just, I don't know, lack of focus against other teams.
Their worst defensive performance might have been also against Minnesota.
Well, sometimes that's how it goes. But there were a lot of things going on in that, though I think were less team breakdowns as much as individual breakdowns and the other team having skill.
So overall, probably really good. The issue is that you and I have set expectations really high, which is fair given the amount of talent that is on this team, and they have probably not quite met them. They've met a lot of it, but...
So your winning percentage in regulation is... somewhere it's like 77%, I think, 13 of 17. In the 3 years of the Mel Pearson second half improvement, not, you know, taking out the year it didn't happen because of the Norris injury, you saw an 18% increase in winning percentage in regulation versus the first half to the second half. Now, it's really hard to have that level of improvement when you start from 76%, but... let's say they take even a step up. You play 16 games in the second half. You probably have a couple that go to overtime. So 14 games, let's say you win 12.
That would be insane.
It wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility, given what the Pearson teams have done in the past, and you're starting from a better point, and you're starting with better talent. You know, that's the potential they could reach, and that's the team that we were kind of hoping for in some ways. So we'll see if they get there.
Depending on who those wins would come against, that would be a pretty much a walk away with the Big Ten, because they're in first.
Unless those wins are coming against like UMass, like unless they went 4-0 in the non-con, and then we're
they only have because of the GLI.
Yeah, so I mean, if you went like that, you would win the Big Ten walking away, and that sort of happened last year with Wisconsin. I mean, Minnesota was the shoe-in at this time last year.
That's
they
true.
Didn't even win the regular season title. So
yeah, that was weird.
More games have been played this year than last year, yes. But they also had a way bigger lead. I mean, they were undefeated. They went 10-0 to start the season in the conference and then got caught down the stretch by Wisconsin, who really turned it on. So... you know, it can happen.
Well, and that's the thing with this team is that they have the talent to flip the switch, like you said, and all of a sudden not lose for a month.
Yeah. At some point after the phony GLI.